Welcome to the Dave the Mystic Show. This is show number 687 with Core Trauma Healing Creator Denise Lamoureux. This is July 8th, 2024 from Littleton, Colorado. This show was pre-recorded on May 30th, 2024. Please consider signing up for show announcements through my website at www.davethemystic.com. Our guest tonight is Denise Colette Lamoureux. Denise's journey as a successful entrepreneur and helping others reach their potential is inspiring. For 26 years, she ran a successful restaurant in Fairfield, Connecticut. Denise became interested in Eastern medicine as she sought to heal her own anxiety and addiction. During this personal journey where she sought answers, she founded a wellness center called Finding Feathers, attracting Eastern practitioners from around the world. Not only did it serve as a transformative space for Denise, it became a welcoming space for the community. Along the way, she began studying Western brain science and trauma from leading practitioners, including Dr. Gabor Mate, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and Dr. Peter Levine. Her education and knowledge in both Western and Eastern medicine created the Colette Technique for Core Trauma Healing. The Colette Technique helps people find freedom from long-term ailments, including anxiety, addiction, physical illness, and mental health issues. Denise has helped people as well as families transform their lives. Welcome, Denise. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's lovely to be here.
Well, tell us about your journey. You've had your own trials, and some people go through the fire to burn off stuff and forge a new future. So what is your story?
Okay, well, thank you so much for asking. I think that my story is very interesting because I don't, like so many of us, I don't think I ever intended to be where I am today. It was never in my mind. I bought a restaurant when I was 29 years old in 1989. And back in 1899, you know, women didn't really own restaurants, never mind a little 29-year-old girl. And I got married and I had two boys. They're now 31 and 34. And I divorced when they were very young. So I was on my own with my kids and I started to do really, really well. And I started to make a lot of money and I bought myself a house, you know, a reasonable amount of money. I was able to buy myself this house. I had a little ski condo that we used to rent. I had a Mercedes, you know, on the outside, everything looked really good. And inside, I felt like a mess. I suffered from anxiety, panic attacks. I was always terrified something was going to happen to my children. I was always afraid the other shoe was going to drop. And I really couldn't figure out. And again, this was the sentence that I used over and over again. What was the matter with me? And people used to say that, what's the matter with you? What's the matter with you? And I remember being a little girl, and I remember my mother used to say that to me all the time. And I remember thinking, without really being able to analyze, aren't you supposed to know? Like, if I don't know, shouldn't you know what's wrong with me? And back in 1989 and really all the way through the early 2000s, we didn't talk about our childhood. It was, right? Not a word, not a word. You shoved it down, the famous buck up, right? I've heard that from so many of my clients. We bucked up. And I knew that my mother was a raging alcoholic. I knew that my father was a functioning alcoholic and yet a rage-aholic. My brother was mentally ill, but not diagnosed. And my house and everybody in my family was having affairs and fighting. And it was just a really, really insane, very crazy place to live. But we didn't talk about that. So here I am, kind of the toast of the town. And I'm the only person not having a good time.
Yeah.
Right. So I found Chardonnay. So Chardonnay, wow, now I don't have any anxiety. Right. Oh, my God, this is the best thing that's ever happened. So now I'm drinking Chardonnay, I'm doing the local television's cooking segment sometimes, and I'm just doing more and more stuff and becoming more and more successful, still feeling terrible about myself, and no one can help me. I've tried, at this point, I've tried AA, I've tried, I'm still in AA today. I had tried all kinds of things. So I went off in search of Eastern medicine. And I'm sure, as you remember, 1996 to 2005, even 2010, Eastern medicine was voodoo. It was back closets. You did not talk about it, even Reiki, right? I remember driving to the backwoods of Woonsocket, Rhode Island to take my Reiki mastership. And I was so scared. I've never told this story to very many people, but it's popping into my head. I was so scared of the Eastern medicine that when I went, you take Reiki one, Reiki two, and then mastership and teacher, right? And you get these two, what's called an attunement. I was so, my teacher said, at the end of this attunement, you will never be the same. I was terrified. I needed to be the same. I had two kids in a restaurant, and I kept thinking all he was telling me was that if I got, yeah, that if I got my Reiki attunement, I'd end up shaving my head and selling flowers in an airport. That was really what I thought. I swear to you, I was terrified. So by the time I got into the Reiki attunement, because it was one person at a time, I was a basket case. And I refused to take the attunement. And I had been studying with this gentleman for at least 2 years. So he said I was the only student he'd had in 23 years that was afraid to get the attunement. So I got it, and there were little cups of water, little Dixie cups of water. And I was like, that's the Kool-Aid, right? So I ended up getting my Reiki Master attunement. I ended up getting theta healing. I studied some shaman stuff. I studied mediumship with John Holland and James Van Praagh, all again in the backwoods of Maine. And I never wanted to become a healer. I just wanted to feel better. And then one day, the building behind my restaurant, which was my office, my liquor room, my food storage for my restaurant, got struck by lightning and burned to the ground. Now, I had no concept of divine intervention at all. I had to build a building for zoning. So I built this building, which was totally magical. I mean, I don't want to bore you with the stories, but it was really extraordinary the way it got built. I didn't have money to build it. People would just do things. I would pay them when I got the money. But when the building was finished, it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And now I didn't know what in the world to do with it because I knew I couldn't put food and booze in it. And within 2 months, I had the busiest wellness center in the state of Connecticut. I had no furniture, no name, no phone, no computer, but I was packed. And it was that you build it and they come. And then healers started coming from all over the world. And that was such a wild couple years because we had gurus and we had shamans and we were doing fire ceremonies and pujas and all kinds of really wild stuff. And I'm still owning a restaurant. So I'm not being a healer, I'm being a businesswoman. I'm promoting them, I'm promoting my restaurant. And then I went off to India. I came back from India and I drank the whole way home from India. By this point, I was kind of getting like 4 months sober, 3 months sober, 5 months sober. I drank the whole way home from India and I didn't know what to do anymore. I really didn't know what to do. I thought I was going to be one of those people that was just never going to make it. And I went online and I came across a gentleman who was doing the TED Talks named Dr. Gabor Mate. And Dr. Gabor Mate today is probably the most world famous trauma and addiction doctor and one of the most extraordinary human beings I've ever had the privilege to meet or listen to, et cetera. I went, oh my God, that's the first person that understands what's going on with me. And he said, don't ever say what's the matter with you. Say what happened to me. Never say why the addiction. Say why the pain. Because all addiction is just an escape. It's just an escape from pain. And I don't look at addiction as alcohol and drugs, just. I look at addiction as money, workaholism, shopping, codependency, right? Alcohol addiction is so very many things. YouTube, social media, to disconnect and disassociate. So I saw Dr. Mate, and honest to goodness, this is the truth. I sold my restaurant because I realized I couldn't stay sober owning in a bar. And it was such divine providence, and my re restaurant was such a success. I sold my restaurant in one day, one day. And then I sold the wellness center and the property that was on. And I spent 2 years traveling around the country to every trauma conference that Dr. Mate was at, every recovery center he spoke at, every conference, anywhere he was, I was front row, just listening, just studying and studying and studying. And I've never picked up a drink since the first day I saw Dr. Mate. Never picked up a drink since. And then I was in New York one night, again, still not wanting to be a healer, just trying to get better. I was in New York one night, and this at a fire puja, at a fire ceremony with some people from India. And the gentleman running the fire ceremony was one of the number one oncologists in New York City. And he was so cool. And people used to go and they'd get their chemo and he'd play crystal bowls and all kinds of stuff. And he helped me get rid of that fear of I'm going to be strange if I become a healer. Because here was this extraordinary oncologist in New York City and he was going, Om Namo Narayani, Om. And I'm like, okay, I can do this. And then he introduced me to this beautiful woman who said, you should meet my best friend. And her best friend turned out to be Dr. Joe Dispenza. And again, Dr. Joe Dispenza was just coming up. You could get into a class with 100, 150 people. So off I went, brain, neurobiological, and lots of other people that I followed and I studied and traveled to. And then I came back here to my home and I just worked on how do I heal myself? How do I take all the Eastern that I've learned, all the Western that I've learned, and how do I take out the pieces that fascinated me and put them to work? And that's exactly what I did. And both you and I are big fans of Dr. David Hawkins' frequency scale, the map of consciousness. Letting go, his book became my Bible. It was just like every day. And I don't know if I showed you the last time we talked, but look what sits across from me in my office.
Oh, wonderful.
Isn't that amazing? It's an enormous vibrational scale. It's been here for years. I couldn't make it all five. I'm still working on that because it doesn't print out well enough when you go that wide. It doesn't do it, but I've got that upstairs. But that's my Bible. And Einstein said no conflict can be resolved from the same consciousness, the same thinking, frequency in which it was created. And here's a fascinating Einstein that we're really seeing today. Einstein said, in the future, all illness will be healed by frequency. We're seeing that today. Dispenza being a perfect example of that, taking blood at the beginning of a week long, meet at taking blood at the end of a week long, seeing the change in DNA. I see it incredibly in my clients. Let's talk a little bit about trauma. Let's see if there's anything else in my journey. So I created this. So I did it. I healed myself and I healed all these traumas. And it wasn't easy because I had to go back to these places, but I had to bring the present day self back. And that was the key that had been missing from all the work that I had ever done. Because all of us that have had any trauma, and trauma is a really, really big word for a wound. It actually is, it's in Greek, the wound. Trauma can be a wound that you can see, right? If I tap my arm right now, and it might hurt, doesn't hurt. If I had a big open wound there, it's going to hurt quite a bit, isn't it? Trauma. But what about also the trauma that we don't see? What about the wounds that get covered with scar tissue, right? What does scar tissue do? It hardens, and you don't feel that, but you're still going to react from it. So then when I did that, I saw this beautiful woman named Anna Raimondi, who is an incredible medium, and she's been a lovely mentor for many years. And she said to me, you need to get your work trademarked because nobody's doing what you're doing. So I did. So my work's been trademarked for about 10 years now, which I'm very grateful that she had me do that way back then. And I decided to start a private practice and do one-on-one healings. And I also do large groups and speaking engagements. So that was my journey. And the fascinating part of the journey was it just kept pushing me. And even though I didn't want to be where it was pushing me, I didn't really have any other place to go because I had owned a restaurant for so long and I knew I couldn't go back to any place with alcohol. And I knew that I had loved in the owning the wellness center, I wasn't the best businesswoman at that because I was making my money off my restaurant. And so I really wanted to serve people. Even when I owned my restaurant, I went underneath the highway bridge every Sunday morning and fed 150 homeless people for 11 years. Service is really important to me. So when I opened the wellness center, I decided to run it by donation so that everybody could come whether they could afford it or not. I'd run a free healing clinic on Monday nights, free meditations. So I started this one-on-one practice and I've been doing it ever since, and it's helped an incredible amount of people. And I just, like you, I feel honored and privileged to be able to help people because I know how it feels to suffer. I have sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, neglect, abandonment, addiction, anxiety. I had depression. I had them all. Sometimes I think the divine gave them to me so that nothing would frighten me in my work, right? Because nothing fazes me. But anyway, I do the one-on-one practice. So let's talk. I'd love if we could to talk a little bit about trauma and how it can also not only heal the emotional well-being, but the physical well-being, because we not only have an incredible mental health crisis going on right now, we also have an incredible rise of illness that are autoimmune. If you look at television, it's asthma, diabetes. I mean, all the meds for asthma, diabetes,
Well, they're
psoriasis,
all stress related.
they're all autoimmune, right? So here's the thing about trauma. There's a part of your brain called the amygdala. And when trauma comes into the brain of a child, now, without wanting to get too technical on the brain of a child, womb, important to mention womb there, to five, only has an unconscious brain. So we absorb everything as truth. So Dr. Mate tells a great story about being a 2-month-old Jewish baby in Hungary, Budapest, right before the Nazis invade. And his mother calls the pediatrician and says, "Can you come and see Gabor? He won't stop crying." And the pediatrician says, "I will, but I just have to tell you, all my Jewish babies are crying." What do Jewish babies know about Hitler? What do they know about genocide? Nothing. But they pick up the energy of my mother. If my mother's not safe, I'm not safe. And here's the big one. If my mother's not happy, I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. I'm not enough to make my mother happy. And those networks get created and are imprinted, and we will run on those programs. As Harvard so beautifully says in their 2012 study on the developing child, we will run on those programs until they're changed. And that's what my work does, is change those programs. And so when you look at that, let's look also at the child's brain of survival mode. So imagine right now, Dave, if you were taking a walk and a bear jumped out at you, well, your brain would say, "Oh my goodness, it's a bear," would send energy to your heart. Your heart would then send energy to your adrenal glands. Your cortisol levels would rise and you'd be able to run, right? And if you fell and broke your ankle, you'd still be able to get up and run the way a mother can lift a car off a child. But what if you're a kid and you never know when the bear's coming home? What if you're a kid and you never know what kind of mood the bear's going to be in? You're going to activate in that survival mode every minute of the day until we change it. And as Harvard says so beautifully in their 2012 study on the developing child, those coping mechanisms that we created as children for survival were vital. They're vital, but they're detrimental to your physical relationship and emotional health as an adult. Why? Because we can't disconnect and disassociate anymore. And being in survival mode like that, it's like having your car in neutral and flooring the gas. Something in the engine's going to break. So we take out the carburetor, we put in a new carburetor. We take out the knee, we put in a new knee. We're only healing the symptoms, not the causes. What I want to know is, why is your foot on the gas pedal to begin with? And I want to get it off. Right? So back to that autoimmune side of things. There's a part of your brain called the amygdala. And when trauma is happening to the child, and remember, trauma is also what didn't happen. Being loved as a child doesn't necessarily translate into feeling loved as a child. So a child can be the child of two working parents who are trying to put food on the table. And the child comes home from school by himself because his parents are working and he feels abandoned, he feels lonely, he feels nobody loves him. But nobody's trying to traumatize anybody there. So
Right.
I always say to my clients, if something happens and on a scale of 1 to 10, you go to a 15 or a 20, there's trauma. Because what happens is when we're young and the experiences happen, if it's too overwhelming for the child, if it's too much for the child, the part of the brain called the amygdala suppresses, depresses, or represses the trauma. And it's buried in the unconscious brain. We may not even remember it. I had blacked out everything before the age of 5. But I understood when my children were very, very little, I was constantly terrified that something was going to happen to them without understanding that it was because terrible things happened to me. Right? So it's really fascinating the way we grow into our adulthood. And when I say adulthood, I'm talking teenage on, right? And even into old age, but we grow into these ages and we feel so lousy about ourselves for so many different reasons. And we think the rest of the world knows how to do life. You know, I used to remember saying that I always felt like I was at the bottom of the well and that I could look up and it looked like everybody was outside the well having a great time. And I couldn't figure out how to get up the well. And then when I started to say that to people, they understood exactly what I was saying. And I realized how vast and how many people were hurting. And I thought, this is it. This is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. This is it. I'm just going to help people. And it's really fascinating. So back onto the where we started with the autoimmune disease and the stress and all these illnesses now. Unfortunately, two things about the amygdala suppressing. First of all, when it does suppress, it suppresses the immune system at the exact same time. So imagine how many times I, or your listeners, or yourself, suppressed your emotions when you were young, even to suppress your emotions today, suppressed what you were feeling, suppressed what you were thinking, probably for lovely reasons and good reasons, but you suppressed. Think how many times you suppressed your immune system. And I could never understand as a restaurant owner, I constantly had bronchitis, constantly. And I remembered my mother telling me when I was really little that I always had asthma as a child, and that quite often I had to be run to the emergency room because of my asthma. And that just made perfect sense for me. So when we take this gap, a foot off the gas pedal, if you will, in the Colette technique for core trauma healing, we're activating the immune system. We're increasing, we're changing the vibration, right? We're changing the frequency in which we live. We're changing what we would call our resting vibration. And in that higher vibration, just as Einstein said, all illness begins to heal. And we're seeing that across the board. John Hopkins has got studies, NYU has, everybody's got studies out about the miraculous stories of people with cancer given 4, 5, 6 months to live, still alive 10 years later, right? And it isn't just lifestyle change, it's brain change. And it's really, really fascinating to me. And so that's how my journey began. Let me also say one more thing for your listeners, because I think that when we can understand what our brain or our body are doing that we think is wrong, weird, incorrect, not normal, however you want to phrase it, because I don't believe there is a normal, right? One of I love one of a conference I went to of Dr. Mate's that said, the myth of normal in an abnormal society, right? Which is a beautiful title. And now his best-selling book out right now actually is called The Myth of Normal. But when we look at what we feel inside, so imagine as a young child, you were programmed to fight or flee. Who were you going to fight with and where were you going to go? And your brain is always going to reprogram itself for survival. That's the name of the brain. healing and survival. So it reprograms itself into what we call freeze or fawn. Fawn, I'm sure many of your listeners will identify with, is when we're a people pleaser. We put everybody else's needs before ours. I mean, I know that was totally me. And freeze is when we disconnect or disassociate or paralyze with fear. And again, going back to disassociate and disconnect, what is that? Addiction, social media, television, workaholism, all those things that give us the benefit, if you will, of being able to avoid what we feel. But eventually, we're going to have to feel it, or we're never going to heal it, right? You can't feel what you can't heal what you don't feel, and you can't heal what you're not aware of. And so a lot of trauma is buried very deep in the unconscious. So quite often I'll have a client and they'll say, well, I know where we're going to go. And we end up in four or five different memories that never even cross their mind. They barely even remember, but they can picture the room, and then they get in there and they're like, oh my gosh, I remember being here. This is what happened. And so the point of the work is to bring the frequencies, the higher colors of the frequency scale down to get the brain into a higher state of neural relaxation, and also to, in my opinion, to awaken the brain, to get the brain to feel safe. Safety is so important for we children of trauma. And when in the higher vibrations of love and serenity and joy, the brain will begin to feel safe. Then the brain's able to open up enough to release memories that have these incredible, powerful emotions behind them. And then we bring the present day self back, because that's the biggest part of the trauma. Trauma isn't what happened. It's how you felt inside as a result of what happened. So an experience can happen to you, the same experience can happen to me. But if your mom says, Dave, that was really wrong, let's go talk to somebody about it. Let's get out of here. Let's go do something, and my mother's drunk, you don't have trauma. I do. Right? So it's so important that that trauma get processed, but it's got to get processed. Dr. Peter Levine says, and I think I'm going to paraphrase here, trauma isn't what happened, it's how you felt inside about what happened without an empathetic witness. There's that key. There was nobody there to help me. There was nobody there to save me. There was nobody there to tell me that that was not okay. So if it's not okay, if nobody's telling me it's not okay, then it has to be me. I'm bad. I'm wrong. I'm stupid. I fail. I'm not good enough, because it's the only way the brain can analyze it. It's the only way the brain can absorb it. And the brain doesn't become analytical until 6 to 9, where it starts to question the tooth fairy and Santa. Prior to that, we believe everything is truth. So even though trauma, in my opinion, trauma can happen at 15 and 20, and trauma can happen at all these different ages. Absolutely, I don't deny it. But I think the root of most of our emotional behaviors begin in childhood, especially before the age of 6. And it was Aristotle who said, show me the 7-year-old and I'll show you the adult. So we even understood this way back then. But trauma didn't come to the surface. First of all, Harvard study in 2012 helped. But the ACEs were created in 1996, adverse childhood experiences. And that was sort of the beginning. And for any of your listeners out there, if they want to know where they stand in trauma, you can Google ACE quiz, and it'll give you a 10-question quiz. And if you'll notice on that quiz, every question is directed before the age of 18. Okay. And then at the end of it, it gives you your score. So it's 10 out of 10 questions. I happen to have a 10 out of 10. So that's my trauma score. But it's a good way to know, how you're doing it, and to see where is your reactor, because what I found that I regret the most is that a lot of my trauma got passed down to my kids. My kids are wonderful. My kids are great, but I had a lot of anxiety as a mother. Anxiety. Yeah. So that's my story.
Well, one of the terms that I learned in when I took some psychology classes was locus of control. And an internal locus of control says, if you're strong that way, you say, I can anticipate a cause and effect between my actions and what's going to happen around me or happen to me. So, for the most part, I won't be hit by big surprises. An external locus of control says, if you're really strong that way, I can't control what happens. I just have to roll with it when it happens because maybe it's God, maybe it's the universe, maybe it's something else, but these things just happen to me. And this really came home to me when years ago I was a volunteer with a child abuse organization, and I was assigned to a family. And it was a single mother with three little kids, and we were there to help model behavior so that they would lessen or minimize their abuse of the kids and start becoming more effective parents.
Good
And
on you.
there were things that happened to her on a day-to-day basis that
The
in my
mother or the
life,
child? The mother or the child?
the mother, there were things that came her way that I would find crushing if I had to live with in my life. And she just blew it off because it's kind of like, well, I don't have any control over it. These things just happen. And it was that sort of that detachment that says, I'm not in control. She wasn't in control about possible ongoing sexual abuse with boyfriends. She wasn't in control of relatives coming over to her house and running up her phone bill, and then she's stuck with a bill, things like that. And so that was very eye-opening for me on
Right, and you can
how people
guarantee that,
function.
right? That was her childhood, right? Guaranteed that was her childhood. Absolutely.
Oh yeah, I'm sure she was heavily abused as a
Yeah.
child, and she just needed somebody to show her this is a better way to work with your kids,
Yeah.
rather than just propagating what had been done to her to her kids because that was the only model she had.
Yes, I went and took my kids when they were like between the ages of 4 and 7, to a child psychologist here in town, and we stayed there for years because I knew I didn't have the tools. You know, I knew that I needed help in how to navigate because I didn't have anybody raise me, and so I didn't know. And the little bit that I did have was not very nice. So yeah. It's fascinating when you get out there, isn't it? When you're out in the field, it's just it opens your heart and you want to save the world. I used to have this motto that I wanted to save the world one person at a time, and now I'm like, I'll save the world 500 people at a time. Because I just want to do big, massive group healings, you know? I mean, I'm still, of course, still doing one-on-ones, but I love it. I love it. And I thought if we had time, maybe we would do like a 15-minute healing for your
Yeah,
listener.
let's do that. That would
I'd
be
love it.
helpful. And what do listeners need to do?
I'd love everybody, if you could, to sit with a nice straight spine because the fluid to the pineal gland in the center of the brain starts at the base of the spine, but don't worry about it if you can't, but I would love if you could sit with a nice straight spine. And I want you to just kind of let go, get just be quiet, turn off, you know, the noise if you could. You know, if you're in a car, roll up your window, pull over, and stay with Dave and I instead of if you're on your computer or your phone, don't be looking at the other one. Just for 15 minutes, really give yourself the benefit of this because it's going to be very powerful. We're going to, as I said, we're going to bring down those colors. Then we're going to bring gold light in. Now, one of the things that normally we would do in a session is you bring the light in to where you believe the trauma is. So a lot of times people will come to me, I've got a bad shoulder, I've got a bad knee, I've got stomach issues. You know, think how many people have stomach issues these days. And the emotional root behind stomach issues is gut level dread. If you follow, I think you and I talked about Louise Hay the last time we chatted, gut level dread. That's fear of the future or knowing something awful, thinking something awful is going to happen. And we have so many people today in that. So, but for the sake of the listeners, I want to go to the neck because the neck holds, I've got to control everything and I've got to keep myself safe. And if you look at that neck, it's the teeniest part of the body, but it holds all the arteries from the brain to the lungs, the brain to the heart, the brain to the bloodstream, right? And what happens when we get anxious or stressed? We constrict. So these arteries constrict. They will never constrict all the way. I wish I knew that when I was suffering with panic, but they'll constrict enough to make somebody who's having an anxiety attack or a panic attack think they're having a stroke, a brain aneurysm, a heart attack, or something along that line. Okay. So, and again, and then from Eastern medicine, if the energy wants to come into the top of my head and go through my throat to get to my heart or my soul, whatever you want to call it, so that I live from towards destiny, if this is saying, no, if my neck is saying, no, I'm going to control everything, it's going to go right back. The energy is going to go right back up into my head and it's going to create that monkey mind, which is the reason why I drank anxiety in the monkey mind. I was never looking to get drunk. It just worked out that way. Okay, so nice straight spine, and everybody close your eyes. If it's comfortable, please have your hands on your lap with your palms facing up. That's a state of receivership. It just opens up your heart and chest. And so we're just going to breathe in some white light from above. I want to stay on time for Dave, so I'm just going to look at my phone there and make sure what time it is. Breathing in some white light from above, bringing it all the way down the body. Letting it go past the feet. We'll just do a little Eastern invocation as we call in all energies of unconditional love. And we call in the highest soul form of each and every one of us here today. We call in Mother Narayani, Mother Earth, Mother Nature. We ask to be clear channels of divine love, divine light, divine healing, and divine peace. And with divine grace, so be it. And then creating above your head a beautiful, beautiful emerald green light. And don't worry, am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? Don't worry about a thing. And breathe in the energy of that green light. And on the exhale, send the green light down the body, letting it go right out the base of the spine into the core of the earth. And then creating another very, very, very beautiful sky blue light above the head, breathing in the energy of the blue light. And on the exhale, send the blue light down the body, letting it go back into the earth. And then one more very, very violet purple, breathing in the energy of the purple light. And then on the exhale, send the purple light down the body. Letting it go past the feet. Don't be afraid of the emotions that might start coming up in a minute. Let them come. All they're going to do is leave your body, and that's what we want them to do so that your body can raise frequency. Breathing in a gold pillar of light from above, bringing it down to the neck, and then just exhale all that gold light all over the neck. And then repeat, body, show me what happened here. Take me to the moment that this started. Show me now. And notice what memory, what vision, what experience is coming to mind. Some people see themselves in their childhood home. In a room, in school, and just notice for a minute, how old are you? And then bring the present day self into the room or whatever that younger version of yourself is, and sit down on the ground or on the floor with him or her. Sit down because I want you to be lower than them. I don't want you to scare them. I don't want you to intimidate them. I want you to tell them that you love them and that you're here to help them and that you understand in that moment there was a lot of fear and that there was nobody there. And I want you to ask them, what are you feeling? And I want you to let them tell you what they're feeling. Are they feeling unsafe? Are they feeling scared? Are they feeling sad? Are they feeling hurt? And then ask them why. Look around the room and see if anyone else is there. Ask them, is it because of that person? And I want you to pick up the younger version of yourself. And I want you to stand up now. And I want you to tell the younger version that he or she did nothing wrong, that he or she is beautiful, that he or she is perfect, and that sometimes other people can hurt us, can be mean, can be cruel, but that they are wrong. They are not the judgment of who we are. And tell the younger version of yourself that you want to take them to a waterfall, anywhere they want it to be. And I want you to bring yourself to a big, beautiful waterfall with the younger version of yourself. And I just want you to tell them also that you feel that you may owe them an apology. Because even though that other person may have been cruel, may have been unkind, may have been abusive, and may have been mean, that you kind of think that over the years, maybe you've been a little abusive to yourself. Maybe you've been a little unkind to yourself, and maybe you've been a little mean. How many times do we look in the mirror and say, you look awful? How many times do we say, when you did something, you did it stupid? We're not. The only way to learn and grow is to make mistakes. Our greatest gift to society is our ability to make mistakes. I want you to tell them that you owe them an apology, and here's the deal we're going to make. We want them to reconnect with us because we understand why they're disconnected, because they haven't trusted us. They're literally neural networks in your brain. And if somebody was abusive or mean or unkind to us, and then we become abusive, unkind, or mean to us, then why would that younger version of ourselves ever want to connect back with us? Why wouldn't it want to stay disconnected, abusing itself in alcohol or ice cream or workaholism? So we wanted to know that we understand that we can be a bit unkind to us too, and that we don't want to be that way anymore because we never realized that it was a younger version of ourselves that we were being mean to. I never understood that the things I said to myself were things I was saying to a four-year-old, to that beautiful little five-year-old, to the six, the seven, the 15, the 18. So tell them that anytime you start to go into that behavior of negativity, you want them to stub your toe. And believe me, guys, they will stub your toe. So when they stub your toe, you're going to make a commitment right now with me that you will promise to acknowledge the stub toe. You'll recognize it. You'll say to them, let me take a look at what has my behavior been. And it won't just be your behavior in that moment. It will be your behavior for the last few days, because nobody's going to stub your toe for one thing. They're going to stub your toe when they're fed up. And we all know what it looks like when a two-year-old or a three-year-old has been pushed past the tantrum. It's an absolute meltdown. So tell them that before you get me sick, before we have a meltdown, before you put me back into my addictions, stub my toe. I'll realize you're there. I'll see my behavior, and I will make you a promise that I will do something wonderful for us within 24 hours. Because I may not be able to get to it immediately. I may not be able to get to it right away, but I want you to know I hear you. And under those conditions, Will you merge back with me? And yes, they will. And so I want you to breathe the younger version of yourself back into the center of your chest. I want you to inhale or he or she into your heart. The information will get sent to the brain, and the neural networks will, that are gripped on to controlling everything will begin to release. And they will go looking for something of a new vibration. And we, right now, are going to put that new vibration in. And with the merged version of yourself, I want you to start to walk out of the waterfall. I want you to notice that there's a gorgeous ray of golden light coming down from above. I want you to get in that ray of light, and I want you to let the magnetic field of that central sun pull you upwards so that you sit in the middle of the central sun, making almost like a Batman or a Batgirl signal, but it's you, letting the universe know there's a new me, and letting the vibration of the bright light of the soul that is inside me, that is all around me, be within me. And then let that sun turn about 180 degrees so that it's facing out onto the night sky, looking out onto the galaxy, at the sun and the moon and the stars. And I want you to see a star that you're really, really attracted to. And I want you to very gently climb out of your central sun. I want you to climb over to that star. And I want you to put your arms in it. I want you to put your legs in it. I want you to put your head in it. I want you to embody it. And I want you to remember that it was said in ancient times that every star in the sky is a soul of one of us down here. And that some of us shine brighter as to lead others out of the darkness. That's who we want to be. We want to be the big, bright, shiny stars that lead others out of the darkness. And so I want you to move your star about 4 or 5 feet forward. And I want you to notice all the little stars that are following you. Those will be the people that will work with you. Those will be the people that will follow you. Those will be your children. Those will be your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren, and your great-great-great-grandchildren. Because when we take trauma out of ourselves, we take trauma out of the lineage to come. So we're healing not only ourselves, but we're healing 7 generations forward. And then move your star just a little bit more forward to where you see it reaching the very tip of a rainbow. Very gently, I want you to climb out of the star, getting into the rainbow, letting all the colors of the rainbow recalibrate all your chakras or energy centers or whatever you'd like to call them at this new vibration. And then let that rainbow bring you back down into your body, bringing you right to where you're sitting right now. And when you're ready, just begin to open your eyes. Coming back. So a couple things to notice. First of all, you may find, and this happens almost all the time, you may find that you crave a very, very strange food over the somewhere within the next day or two. It's the food that the whatever age you woke up and reconnected with, it's the food they ate. So a lot of times my clients will say, why do I want a Hostess cupcake? Why do I want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? I had a client recently say, why am I singing the Flintstones theme song? It's because we woke up that part of our brain that went to sleep for safety, that got so suppressed down, it went for safety. And sometimes people might say, well, why would I want to wake them up? Right? If they're shoved down there nice and deep, why would I want to go back and remember these things? Two reasons. One, you're reacting from it every minute of the day. Trauma is not what happened. It's a reaction. It's also making you sick. And if you want to live, so many of us want self-love, right? The big word, self-love. We all have self-love, Dave. We all have it. It's just we only have little amounts of it. So we make it bigger. Let's go to our frequency scale, the map of consciousness again. Let's look at shame at the very bottom. It's got a frequency of 20. Love, which would include self-love, has a frequency of 500. That means if I say one nice thing about myself and 25 lousy things about myself, it's just erased the one good thing, right? So what you need to do is when you have those days that you look in the mirror and you think, I look pretty good today. When you have that day where you walk away and you said, I said the most perfect comment. That was great, right? Take it. Take the win. Because if you expand that, you're expanding the neurons of the frequency of 500 that you're putting in your brain. And that's going to lift you up so that you rest in a higher vibration. Now, doesn't mean I don't pop down, right? Doesn't mean we don't pop down. You were kind enough to help me with a pop down last week, right? We're all human beings. We're going to drop into fear. We're going to drop into guilt. We're going to, but I don't live there anymore. And I lived in fear and shame and guilt and addiction. I did. I lived there. And so now today, I get to live in light and love, and I get to meet beautiful people like you, and we get to go out and help the world and serve the world and hopefully change the world. And what a gift. And I know you and I have spoken privately, so I can say this, like, we're so grateful to have the opportunity to do it.
Yes.
We really are. Like, we don't come on here for the reason of any other reason is to get the word out to more people.
Yes.
You know, you're okay. And it's okay to not be okay. And there's plenty of people out here that want to help you.
Yeah.
Just reach out. Yeah. Because we have suicide rates for kids flying up 425%. The suicide rate for teenage girls just went up again. 10-year-olds are hanging themselves. Yeah. College jumping off their dorm balconies. You know, and I understand that. I was that sad.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody to be.
Absolutely.
Especially moms. I'm a big mom girl, you know. It's like it's not my only, you know, it's certainly not my specialty, just moms. But oh, give me an anxiety ridden mom, and I'm like, oh, I know exactly how you feel. So just, you know, and any so weird food, eat it. Any bad dreams tonight? Great. It's just some trauma releasing that doesn't have a root. Just because we opened the amygdala, not a big deal. But you should notice tomorrow that you feel lighter. You probably might notice right away, but sometimes releasing trauma can be quite exhausting. So you are exhausted for the day. And then the next day you just wake up feeling so much lighter. I had a client I did yesterday at 8 a.m. California time. And he was like, well, I'm lighter already. So, you know, it was great. It was great.
Good.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for being on. This has been a joy.
It's been my pleasure to meet you. And to your audience, that anybody that doesn't know, he's a really great man and a great healer. Very helpful.
You're gonna make me blush.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for letting me come on.
Sure. And for those in the audience who want to go to Denise's website, it's denisecolette.com. So that's pretty easy.
Yeah, one L, two T's.
And Instagram is Denise Colette Lamoureux. That's Lamoureux. So go ahead and find Denise there.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Well, thank you. I wish you all the best, and thank you for being on the show.
Have a great day. I'm sure we'll talk again.
Okay. And for our listeners, please join us for our show next week with award-winning author, New York University professor, and TV show creator, Marilyn Horowitz. Thanks for listening and blessings. Take care.